Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Supertalk 99.7.
On Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandis Show. Yes, indeed. The 145, Judith Regan, who did that epic interview with O.J. Simpson, 12 years ago? She's going to join me at 145 to get her thoughts on that interview. A couple other things we are working on may or may not be here tomorrow, because listen to this. If you like margaritas, and really, who doesn't like a good margarita? Chili's, and this is not a commercial, but if you're into margaritas, celebrate Chili's birthday with $3.13 margaritas. So apparently these things go for like $7. And so now they're in celebration of their 43rd birthday. Chili's is going to be offering what they call Presidente Margaritas all day on Tuesday, March 13th. And so it's a very good deal. And I happen to like Chili's a lot. So possibly I may.
You like Chili's margaritas, do you?
I actually do like Chili's margaritas. I like margaritas. I can only do, when I drink a margarita, I can only do maybe half of a margarita before I start getting on the table and dancing. And that's,
wait, are
nobody
you
wants
serious?
To see
that. Do you know how much tequila they don't put in margaritas?
Oh, I don't know.
Are you being serious right now?
Yeah.
When was the last time you had one?
About a month ago. 3-4 weeks ago, yeah.
So considering the way you've been ramping up the drinking, your tolerance has probably increased, though.
You know, it's funny, you'd think. It's funny, I said to Michael Del Giorno, I've been here 4 years now, and when I got here, I didn't drink. And now all of a sudden, I'm a raging alcoholic, which actually,
yes,
no, I'm not.
Yes, alcoholic with sangria and margaritas.
We're getting early Sunday morning calls for bail money.
Because you've overdosed on sangrias, on blackberry wine from Amber Falls.
So I think we're done. Thank you. It's 107 on Super Talk.
No, but wait, I know you wanted to move on, but seriously, do you know how little tequila they put in?
I have no idea.
At restaurant, when restaurants do margaritas, they put very, very, they don't, I don't even think they do a full.
Well, then why do I start getting dizzy after about half of a margarita?
Because it's all in your head.
It's, oh, trust me, it's not in my head.
A, it's all in your head, and B, it's probably the sugar high.
Oh.
With all the sugar they put in those things. So it's, yeah.
Maybe it's all, maybe it goes to my head, but I don't think it's all in my head. So
you can psychologically talk yourself into being a little buzzed.
Really?
Sure. Yeah,
right,
you can.
Very good. You know what? Maybe what we do, we have a drinking test here on the air one day.
With restaurant margaritas?
With the restaurant
Absolutely.
Margaritas.
Absolutely. Why not?
You know what? Let's have Chili bring in some Chili's. Have some of their Presidente margaritas come in.
You won't be here tomorrow, though, will you?
No, I'm not here tomorrow. I'm actually taking the day off. David Zanotti is going to, you get to have fun with David Zanotti, and he'll
be
here filling
drink,
in for
so
me.
He's not going to bring in any margaritas.
No, but maybe he will bring in some of those high-fluting M&Ms we were talking about earlier.
That'd
so.
Be nice.
All right, very good. It's 108 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Yeah, talking about Bono very quickly, and then I'm going to move on. Bono's charity has been now apparently exposed as a toxic culture of bullying and abuse. Now, listen, Pamela, Bell, you guys think you have it bad here at WTN working with me. How would you like this? Much of the mistreatment has been said to have been had at the hands of one Sifo Moyo, who made a lot more than me, $173,000 a year. And apparently old Sifo, which is a female, by the way, intimidated one member of staff into massaging her feet. So for the record, I've never asked either one of you for a foot rub. Woke up another worker at 1 o'clock in the morning in South Africa and ordered her to sort out the air conditioning in her hotel room in Seattle. So apparently Omoyo is in Seattle on a trip. She calls some worker in South Africa at 1 o'clock in the morning and says, get my air conditioning fixed. I mean, these are the kinds of things that is going on at Bono's one charity. Invited colleagues to parties at her house, only to use them as a waiting staff, making one woman stand outside for up to 7 hours mixing drinks. Can you imagine that? Hey, come to a party at my house. Oh, by the way, once they get there, you're going to be serving drinks. Ordered another worker to find her a greyhound puppy, then drive to another city to collect it. And again, Bono now is apologizing for all this. The person who is the main perpetrator of all this, Omoyo, the organization's most senior African official from 2010 to 2015, is now hitting back, saying that she vehemently denies the bullying claims and argues that she is being smeared. One, whose board of high-profile figures includes David Cameron and Facebook chief Sheryl Sandberg, now admits there was mistreatment and inaction by former managers. Its current president, Gail Smith, said that she was, quote, troubled by the claims, accepting there was what she would characterize as bullying and belittling of staff. And we've heard about problems with Bono's charity for a long time. The claims, backed by witness statements and documentary evidence, are hugely embarrassing for the organization that attempts to harness celebrities to campaign against corruption, sexism, and dirty money. You know, I'm sitting here reading all this. You could say that that very last sentence, and I'm going to read it one more time. The claims, backed by witnesses' statements and documentary evidence, are embarrassing for an organization that harnesses celebrities to campaign against corruption, sexism, and dirty money. It's kind of like the Hillary Clinton campaign and camp, isn't it? I mean, we know that Hillary is somebody who is she uses celebrities for her own use and trying to get votes and so on and so forth, even though her own campaign is rife or was rife with corruption, sexism, and dirty money as well. So it goes on and on. So one of the things that I think when I was reading that, and I was also sharing with you how Leonardo DiCaprio's foundation auctioned dates with Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey. I mean, they raised a whole bunch of money. The thing that I would say about this, again, very quickly, is that you can't tell me that the folks there, Leonardo DiCaprio's foundation, did not know what a creeper Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey are. I mean, the rumors of Harvey Weinstein and certainly Kevin Spacey as well, they've been around Hollywood for a long time, yet they decided that it would be okay to auction dates for those folks. Now, one of the things that you would say is this is one of the reasons why a lot of these bigger charities, it's why they have a lot of problems. And so because they have a lot of problems, I think that the majority of people now, when they see stories like this one, it's why fewer people are giving to bigger charities like Leonardo DiCaprio's charity and Bono's one charity. And they actually look for more charities or more charitable causes that help everyday people that we see on social media, like waitress Ebony Williams. Now, this is one of what I would say is one of the absolute best stories on social media today. And I saw this just a few minutes ago. Waitress Ebony Williams. She works at a Waffle House in, I think it's Lamarque, Texas, and she's 18 years old, and she's saving for college. And so she's a waitress, and she's a cook, and she does all these various things at Waffle House. And so there's a picture. It's a viral picture now, and I believe it may be a video as well. An elderly man comes in, and this 18-year-old waitress decides that because the man, he comes in there all the time and he's old, he's like 79, 80 years old, and he's been going in there for years and he's got all kinds of weaknesses. He's got an illness going on, and he asked her if he would please cut his ham. And she said, yeah, I will absolutely cut your ham. And so she starts cutting his ham. Well, somebody took a photograph of Ebony Williams cutting the ham and posted it on social media. And it just absolutely explodes on social media. And so now, because Ebony Williams, she did something very nice for this very old man, the mayor of her town there in Texas decided to proclaim March 8th as Ebony Williams Day. But beyond all that, in addition to receiving her own day, the story of Ebony Williams and this very old man also caught the attention of Texas Southern University and the president there, Austin A. Lane, who also saw it on social media and decided that he would arrange for her through the power of social media and goodwill. They awarded this woman a $16,000 scholarship. And I think that this is one of the reasons why so many people are willing to give to, again, things that they see on social media, because when we read about what happens in some of these big, almost like corporate charities, and then you see just plain everyday folk doing good things, you want to give to those people. You want to help those people. And so one of the things that she wants to do, Ebony Williams wants to do, is she hopes to study business administration, one day open a restaurant of her own. And it's interesting. The other day we talked about how millennials are fleeing from social media. And the reason why so many millennials are fleeing from social media is because of all of the bad news that we see every single day. So I just wanted to point that out to you as one of those instances where there is something good that has come out of social media. Saw this. We were talking about this a while back. I think it was last week or the week before. You remember Flippy? It was all about automation. It was all about how robots were going to start taking over the jobs of a lot of these folks in fast food restaurants. And Flippy was basically a burger flipping robot. And I know that Phil was talking about Flippy, and I talked about Flippy as well. And it's all about the fight for $15 an hour. It's all about automation and how automation is going to be taking over jobs and all this other stuff. And so Flippy was supposed to be the next big thing. Well, unfortunately for Flippy, but this is actually good for people that are demanding $15 an hour. Your job is safe for now because Flippy indeed got fired after just one day. Flippy has been taken offline because simply in fast food terms, could not keep up with all of the hamburgers that were being ordered. The robot was taken offline in fast food terms at Caliburger. BBC reports this was in California. After Flippy was unable to keep up with demand, Mizo Robotics introduced the robot as a potential replacement for human cooks. So I think folks who make, $10, $11, $12 an hour, demanding $15 an hour, I think they can breathe easier for another day at least. The burger flipping robot has been switched off until coders can update it. Interest and news about Flippy's hiring created an increased demand at the restaurant, leading to more orders than it could handle. See, isn't that interesting? So it hits the news and the media that Flippy's going to be working in the restaurant. And so then you have all these folks that come into the restaurant to see Flippy. And so then all of a sudden, because of all of that increased demand, Flippy actually isn't able to handle all of that demand. Caliburger is reportedly working with staff to make sure the kitchen is working around. You know, I'm sure the staffers there are really thrilled to be dealing with and having to work around Flippy to make sure that Flippy works as efficiently as possible, because there will be a battery of Flippies that replace these folks in the kitchen there at Caliburger. They're reportedly working with staff to make sure the kitchen is working around Flippy as efficiently as possible. The restaurant hopes to eventually deploy Flippies in more of its locations. Mizo Robotics says Flippy can detect when raw burger patties are placed on the grill and monitors each one. They say cloud-based software from the company keeps track of the cook time and alerts workers when it's time to dress the burger patty. Now, Flippy will be able to eventually... Yeah, would you? I guess the other question I would ask is: would you trust a hamburger to be able, or a robot to tell when a hamburger is done, as opposed to an actual human being? Because
sure, why not?
Would you? It's just a question.
Plus, you got to remember, this is all real early generation technology.
Flippy is?
Yeah, before all is said and done, that thing's going to be able to dress the burgers too.
Oh, listen, let me tell you something. In a few years, there's going to be the majority of workers in a restaurant is going to be automation or robots. I mean, I think we all
somewhere,
know that, don't we?
Somewhere in that robot is a laser that scans the patty and reads the temperature and knows when it's finished.
Flippy was going to be able to cook up to 2,000 burgers a day, eventually, the company touts. And so one of the things that they're looking at, and if you've seen a video of Flippy, I don't know, Bill, if you saw the video of Flippy. I mean, it really was incredible. It really was. And so,
but I got to say, 2,000 seems awful low for an average McDonald's.
Yeah, I wonder how many average
I would have guessed probably between 5 and 7.
Yeah, but if you have a number of different Flippies, you know
what
I mean?
Yeah, so, good point.
Yeah, so in other words, if you have multiple Flippies going at any certain time, then Flippy or multiple Flippies will be able to do as many hamburgers as you possibly need it to do. And I think that one of the things that a lot of people are going to say, and anybody who runs a business, anybody who owns a business will tell you, that if they could replace people with automation, they would. And it's just sadly a sad fact of business today. You know, one of the hardest things that we do, and I'm not, getting into a ZipRecruiter commercial, but one of the hardest things that is happening in the world today is it is hard to find good people. And so for a lot of these various restaurants and fast food places, and again, places like Walmart, places like, Target, a lot of these other places, the more that they can use automation, the more efficient it is and the cheaper some of these things will be for us to either purchase or do business with. And so automation, whether or not Flippy has succeeded or not, automation is here to stay. And that is If you're somebody who is a free market kind of person, you know, that's all about the free market. So those people that are screaming $15 an hour, we deserve, just because they are in a lot of trouble. 120 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandis Show.
I'm Pamela Furr, the latest on the explosions in Austin. And the president says he wants to leave the age limits on guns up to the states. These stories and more coming up at 1:30 on WTN.
126 on Super Talk. I'm here. It's 126 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Got this from Rosalie. Sitting here talking about Flippy, the robot that they had to take offline now because it couldn't keep up with the hamburgers. Listen to this. This is what Rosalie says. I'll have to do some more digging on this. She says, I read that the problem with Flippy was that the people that had to put the mustard and mayonnaise and the cheese on the hamburgers and prepare them after Flippy had cooked the burger were the ones that couldn't keep up with Flippy. And that's why they took it out of the system, because the human manpower was too slow. Love your show. Bill, can you find out if that's true? I can't. I'm in the middle of a show. And as we know, when you Google something on this here particular computer, it goes down. But
Did you just call me Bill?
Bell. No, I called you Bell.
All right.
What Bell? Listen, I don't care what Bell, whoever, just find out what it is. I'm just kidding.
I'm whoever.
You are whoever. No, I'm just kidding. If you could find out, though, for
me. Whoever doing whatever.
Whoever doing whatever. Just get it done. Come on, man. I'm just
kidding. Thank Bono.
Massage my feet, Pamela, won't you? No, I'm just kidding.
Nope.
Did you hear all the things that were going on at Bono's charity? Yeah. All of the foot massaging and all of this other kind of stuff. So we'll
Allegations.
Well, the board says that it all happened. So, you know, I don't know if that is proof enough. But now the board and Bono and everybody else is apologizing. Stormy Daniels, by the way, of course, in the news. I have must be four or five different Stormy Daniels articles and things that came out over the weekend. Now, as we know, and Pamela, I think, was reporting this earlier, maybe not. But Stormy Daniels now, this is the porn star and the stripper, and she does all these things. And she says that she had an affair with the president. She signed some sort of a non-disclosure form way back when, and it was all about $130,000 she was paid off to not say a darn thing. As she says that the whole thing is null and void because the president himself never signed it, and that's where we are today. Now, a couple of headlines very quickly, then I got to jump to a break. Stormy Daniels' lawyer says that 10 people have now come out to offer the $1 million penalty if Stormy Daniels ends up getting fined or has a judgment set against her for speaking out. So there's that. Also, now we have the fact that the Trump attorneys are considering a challenge to stop a 60 Minutes interview from airing, this Stormy Daniels interview. And she says that all of these things that are coming out about her are a double-edged sword. Now, I love this. Is she really saying that? It sounds like she's trying to play the victim here. CNN dispatched a camera crew. Now, how desperate is CNN, by the way, very quickly, how desperate is CNN for anti-Trump news? They dispatch a camera crew to her first live performance since she filed the lawsuit against President Trump, all the way to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where I guess she was set to perform at the Solid Gold Gentlemen's Club. So Nick Valencia apparently either got the long straw or the short straw, depending on how you look at it. CNN correspondent Nick Valencia.
That's what she said.
appeared on New Day the morning after Stormy's report to say that she performed in front of about 200 people and gave an interview during a meet and greet afterwards. So people are flocking to her performances. And I don't know, Belle, do you even think this woman's good looking? I don't even think she's that good looking.
I'm not into blondes, but, yeah. You know, I wouldn't turn her down. You know, of course, I have a shot. So, you know.
Well, people now are flocking to her performances.
You know what I thought you said?
Me?
That you've had your shot.
That's, no, I said
meaning
I wouldn't.
Meaning as in a shot, like a penicillin shot or something. That's what I thought you meant.
I've had that too. I'm not foolish.
Listen. Okay, you know what? Just very quickly.
Mine was just weird.
Just very quickly. Along those lines, though. Okay, now just go with me here for this. We know that President Trump is kind of a germaphobe, right? So speaking of penicillin shots, do you really think, listen, for the record, it wouldn't surprise me if President Trump had an affair with this woman. That's not, you know, people elected this guy knowing he had many flaws. But the question is, knowing that how much of a germaphobe he is, do you really think that he would have some sort of a an affair with a porn star. I wouldn't touch a porn star or a stripper with a 10-foot pole.
Well,
or somebody
those
else.
Those women are
pole.
Tested much, much more than the average
right.
person.
Right. That's number one. And number two, really?
You can say it. Come on.
What kind of sex are we talking about?
I'm going to give a time check on that.
I mean, seriously.
No,
I know
what you're talking about. I do.
You know, but he, I mean, was he known to date porn stars? I thought he was just known to date beautiful women, necessarily porn stars.
Yeah, see, I thought it was just beautiful women. I mean, Marla Maples certainly
wasn't. Models and beauty queens and things like that.
Yeah, and he obviously has a thing for blondes, so.
Yeah, so I didn't think it was, he was the playboy that did the porn stars.
Right.
But.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't, for whatever reason, knowing that he's a germaphobe and knowing that this guy could.
Well, you know they make condoms. Did you know that?
Yes, I do know
okay,
that.
Just
but
checking.
We should do a podcast on this because there's so many things. There's so many things that I could say about this
help
that I
out.
Just can't say on the radio, so I'm going to leave it there. But I just don't see President Trump, a guy who could get just about, if not any woman.
I have some breaking news.
What?
Stormy is going to be performing here in Nashville at the end of the month.
Is she really?
Yeah.
Which club?
Deja Vu.
Oh, of course.
Now I think I can say this on the radio. I have a friend who is, we like to say she is in charge of the Department of Homeland Security.
Yes.
So she just informed me that, yeah, she has filed the paperwork, and so she's supposed to be performing at Deja Vu at the end of the month.
Yeah.
So I would venture to say a lot of local press would probably be there,
you know, should
to
we, should we send a intrepid reporter Ken Reaver to cover the Stormy
Daniels?
I think
if Daniels. You did that, I think his wife would be
I'll
very
go.
Upset.
I got it covered.
You know, Bell loved taking one for the team. Bell's going to go.
And he's
check
had his
out
shot.
And he's had his shots, apparently. All right, we got to go. 133, Super Talk, 99.7 WTN. 138, Super Talk, 99.7 WTN, Dan Manda Show, 615-737-9986, 615-737-WWTN. Yeah, you know, for those folks, just give me 5 seconds on this. For anybody who thinks that Stormy Daniels is some sort of a victim here, no, she is raking in the money like you wouldn't believe. So she's got all kinds of movie offers. She's got all kinds of offers to, you know, pose and those kinds of things. And so when she says it's a double-edged sword, when she says, oh, this is just, you know, people only want to talk to me about the whole President Trump thing and not about her skills and abilities, let's say, to her profession. Meantime, she's launching some sort of, I guess you'd say, a nationwide tour from strip joints all across America, including, as we found out in the last segment, apparently she's going to be coming in with, here at the end of the month, at Deja Vu, or whatever it is. And so, yeah, I've never seen I don't know if you've ever seen this, Pamela, but I've never seen a meet and greet with a stripper. But apparently that's what she's able to do is have a meet and greet.
They all do them.
Seriously? Strippers do meet and greets like they're rock stars?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they do multiple shows a night. And when they get done dancing on stage, you can go by a certain area of the club and get a picture with them. Or more money, of course.
I have never in my life heard that. Now, I don't, for the record, I'm not somebody who goes to strip joints or clubs or whatever.
I mean,
it is,
I'm not either, but I did know that, yes.
Doggone it. Now I'm down this stupid rabbit hole of strippers. So are strippers sort of like a superhero kind of thing? Like people know who strippers
They're
are?
Like rock stars. Yeah, there's a circuit.
Seriously?
Yes.
There's a circuit for strippers?
Yes.
Oh, my God, they make more money. When women get into that profession, they tend to make more money touring and dancing than they do making their quote-unquote movies.
Right.
And the movies are a way to build a brand name so that when you go on tour, you can demand more money from the club.
I had no idea there was like a whole stripper circuit kind of thing. I learn something new every day.
And it has to be regulated. So therefore, my friend, again, is in charge of that in Nashville.
Yeah. All right. Well, I didn't know. So there you go. All right. 145.
I did not know that.
I didn't know there was. How do people find out about a stripper that's based in Florida? See, way back when I was in college, I'm not going to say I've never been to a strip joint. I have. But way back in college. And so my question is, the strippers that were in that particular club, I mean, they weren't nationwide strippers, as far as I know. They're all just local girls.
Well, the local ones don't go on the circuit.
Right.
But the ones that have a quote-unquote brand name, because
right.
they're known from doing
right.
you know, movies and stuff, they
I guess.
Those do.
Something far more important that we're going to talk about at 1:45 is the fact that we have Judith Regan, who did that interview with O.J. Simpson last night. It was actually 12 years ago, but it aired last night. That interview is coming up next right here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.
I'm Pamela Furr. Coming up at 2 o'clock, we'll have the latest on those explosions in Austin. It's all ahead on WTN.
1:46 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandis Show. Glad to welcome into the program Judith Regan. And boy, oh boy, are you busy today. I appreciate you taking a few minutes of your time to speak to us here in Nashville, Tennessee. Judith, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So let's talk a little bit about this interview 12 years ago. And a lot of people are clearly focused on this interview that you did with O.J. Simpson. A lot of people are saying, well, this was clearly a confession. Other people, not so much. I would just say the whole thing was bizarre. When you carried out this interview 12 years ago, and a lot of people have, of course, seen it because it is all over the internet today, do you really believe that this was O.J. Simpson's confession?
I absolutely do. If you watch the special, he hangs himself on every word. He tried to do it as a hypothetical, but he couldn't help himself, and so he slips over and over again. Yeah, I remember leaving the glove. I do remember the knife. He remembers the bloody clothes. He gets very personal, and he goes from, well, if it had happened, this is how I think it would have happened, right into I remember.
Yes.
And it becomes very personal. There was an FBI profiler there. And I've since had calls from a psychologist and other people who work in law enforcement who say to me, although it may seem bizarre, this is in fact how interrogations are done in the CIA by the FBI. I had a note today from a NCIS interrogator who interrogated Al-Qaeda terrorists who said to me, the way you handled him is exactly how we train people to handle terrorists when they're trying to get information from them. And I think, you know, by not sitting in judgment, by not pushing him, he hung himself over and over and over again. He curses her. Why didn't you listen to me? Now look what you've done. What you've done? No, OJ, what you've done.
Now, you're talking about the reaction to the interview from folks that have done interviews with Al-Qaeda and so forth. How did you prepare for this interview with OJ? Was it your desire to try and get him to hang himself, if you will?
Well, you know, I prepared with the night before somebody from the CIA who basically taught me how to talk to him, what my demeanor should be, how I should look at him, what we should talk about, how to put him at ease, because he's a malignant narcissist and a psychopath. And once he was comfortable, he started speaking more freely about the situation. And, you know, it was very chilling for me. I did try to get him to talk about the night of the murders. I didn't know what he was going to say. I knew what he had written about in the book because I had the manuscript, but I didn't know which direction he would go in. I had no idea what he would do and what he would say. And I was quite shocked by some of the things that came out of his mouth.
One of the things I would ask is, how did you, and again, this interview was filmed or taped 12 years ago, just aired last night. How did you bag this interview? I mean, this is obviously probably, I would say, I mean, one of the best gets, you will, as we say in the business, as far as interviews go. How did you end up getting the interview with OJ?
I was the publisher of the book that was canceled, and he was going to sit down and do an interview with respect to promoting his book. He thought he was going to promote his book, where he reveals a lot of these things as well. But he revealed a lot more in the interview. And when you see him talking, it was incredibly riveting, because I knew once he sat down to do the interview, he could never hide behind that, because that was him on full display. He couldn't have deniability once he said it.
Yeah, I think once you get comfortable, if you're somebody who is being interviewed by someone, once you get comfortable, you almost forget about the camera. And it seems to me, I was watching it, it seemed that the more comfortable O.J. got, the more guilty he seemed.
I know, because he got comfortable, basically. And you got to see the real guy. And the real guy is a batterer and a murderer. You know, the way he talked about Nicole, she hit me. In every instance, he's the victim. She did this to me. She did that to me. Even after he kills her, he's such a psychopath. He says, Nicole and Ron killed me.
Yeah.
That's how he perceives it. He thinks he's the one that was damaged. He's angry at her. He's angry at her after he kills her. He even says, I thought, you know, when she died, I would feel better, but the anger was still there. He goes to her gravesite and curses her. Didn't I say to you? Didn't I tell you? And then he talks about the frustration he feels because he's never going to be able to change her. That is textbook manipulative, controlling batterer. That is how these men who batter women think and feel. And we had a glimpse inside the mind of your basic average guy who batters women, only in this case, he killed her.
Now, why do you think Judith Regan joins us? She did the interview with O.J. Simpson 12 years ago, just aired last night. Why do you think he did the interview? I do understand that he was promoting the book and so forth. But do you think that he went into the interview hoping to exonerate himself in the eyes of the public, in the court of public opinion?
You know, I'm not sure he thinks in a rational way like that. I think he's a very emotional guy. I think he, as you could see, he was simmering. He has a quick switch. He gets angry pretty quickly. I'm not sure he thinks things through like that. I don't know why he sat for the interview. I don't know why he decided to do the book. I didn't call him. His lawyer called me. I didn't chase after him. They called me.
Mm.
It is chilling. I mean, you know, I have my own theories about it. He likes the attention. He's very manipulative. He thought he could get away with confessing by claiming he was going to do it hypothetically. And then he really didn't do a very good job of that, did he? Because once he sat down and felt comfortable, he gave himself away over and over again.
Do you think this is a guy now where, I mean, clearly many, many years after the killings, and this is 12 years after your interview, do you think that, did he have remorse at the time of the interview? And do you think maybe he has some remorse now?
No. The only remorse he has is, as he will say, this whole experience ruined his life. He has no remorse for what he did. Zero. And, you know, look, frontal lobe damage causes a lack of empathy sometimes. Maybe his years in football, you know, maybe he suffers from some kind of traumatic brain injury. And I'm not saying this to excuse his behavior.
Sure.
But his behavior would indicate the rage that he felt, the need to control her, this kind of maniacal, manipulative, controlling behavior. And the way he conducted himself in the interview, which seemed to me to demonstrate a psychopathic, non-empathic man who takes zero responsibility for anything that he ever did, blames her for everything, and has almost a thought process disorder. It was so alarming to see how little regard he has for anyone else but himself.
Well, the sad thing about this, Judith, is that today there are millions of people who still look at O.J. Simpson almost like a folk hero. Is there a part of you that hopes that, maybe a big part, maybe all of you, hopes that this interview where he clearly looks guilty, and at least to me, it clearly does confess to this, the murder of Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown Simpson, do you think that this interview will bring to the forefront the fact that clearly this guy is guilty and people will stop wanting to pose with him for selfies in restaurants in Las Vegas and Florida?
You know, I hope so, because he is not a hero. He's a murderer. And although there have been many injustices throughout American history, Rodney King and others, And although I fully understand the anger and frustration of the African American community with respect to some of the abuses of law enforcement in the past, doing this and turning him into a hero is not the way to deal with that issue. Two wrongs don't make a right, and it was wrong to let him get away with murder, and it's wrong to make him a hero. And I hope that by watching this interview, people see the man he really is, and people have a greater understanding of the face of a textbook abuser.
What do you think, folks? There's a lot of folks that maybe have not seen this interview. And if somebody doesn't necessarily care about the O.J. Simpson case, and this was a long time ago, why should somebody watch this interview? It's obviously online everywhere.
I think that they should watch it to see what a guy who is a textbook abuser looks like, sounds like, and acts like. You know, he describes the way he describes his relationship with his ex-wife, how he stalked her, how he terrorized it, how he excuses that behavior. He's very, in fact, run-of-the-mill in terms of being, an abuser.
Were you happy? You must have been thrilled that this story, this interview, finally was unearthed after 12 years because of everything you just mentioned, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if happy is the word, because it made me very sad. The whole thing makes me incredibly sad. I find it amazingly depressing and horrifying. And I also think that people should never forget the victims, Ron Goldman and Nicole Brown, and the children who were left behind without a mother, who grew up without their mother, who had to be raised by him. There are a lot of victims in this story, and there are a lot of people who had their hearts broken. And, you know, this is an issue in terms of domestic violence. It's an issue that doesn't go away. 10 million people a year are assaulted and are victims of domestic violence. I think that law enforcement has become more enlightened in the last 20 or 30 years. I myself had gone through this in the 70s. I was assaulted. I was stalked. I was terrorized by a man who was educated, Harvard psychiatrist, handsome, you know, amazing, brilliant. He had taken up boxing in his case, and after a few blows to the head, his behavior changed. He became very violent. He started assaulting me. Yeah. He stalked me. And I went through a very similar thing, and blaming me for everything. And this kind of behavior used to be met with things like, you must have done something to provoke him. What did you do to get him so angry? I'm 5'4", and at the time I was about 110, 115 pounds. He was 6'4", 250, and that's what police officers would say to me when I would call them. And I listen to the tapes of Nicole, and I hear the fear in her voice, and it is so heartbreaking. It's heart-wrenching for me to listen to that. And interviewing him, just for me personally, was traumatic. Revisiting it was traumatic. And heartbreaking for the Goldman family, for the Brown family, for the children of O.J. Simpson, for all the people he let down and disappointed. And I hope that at least it gives somebody somewhere some awareness of the face of domestic violence and how serious it is and how seriously it needs to be taken.
And Judith, I know that we are rapidly running out of time. Very quickly, Fred Goldman originally was against this interview. Now he's come out and said that he's glad that the interview was released because he wants the American people to see for themselves. Do you know if he watched it, and has there been any reaction from the Goldman family?
You know, I haven't heard anything. I know that he had expressed to Fox that he was in support of the project, and I was happy to hear that. I hope they have a positive response to it, and I hope, you know, whoever thought that O.J. Simpson was innocent has a change of heart.
All right, and Judith Regan Talks is a new podcast that is coming soon to Westwood One Radio Networks. And in 20, 25 seconds or less, can you describe, I'm sure you're going to be talking about this story and many others. What is the podcast about?
I'm just going to interview, authors, opinion makers. I'm going to tackle topical events and news and ideas and opposing points of view and tell great human stories. And I really just want to get to the heart of the matter, no matter what the matter is.
And Judith, thank you very much. You have a great afternoon. It's 2:01 on WTN.